Follow Jimmy on Twitter at Jimmy Mathis Show or email Jimmy at jmathis@wbal.com.
Tony, it's been a busy news week for what is supposed to be a slow holiday week. Since being signed in the early hours of November 24th in Geneva, the deal between Iran and six world powers over its nuclear program has been subject to various interpretations. While maintaining Iran's right to peaceful nuclear energy, the joint plan of action, this is the four-page interim agreement between Iran and the five permanent members of the United Nations Security Council, the U.S., Russia, China, France, and the U.K., together with Germany, this obligates Tehran to halt its nuclear program for 6 months, the duration of the agreement. In return, sanctions on the Islamic Republic imposed in 1995 by the U.S., from 2006 onwards by the U.N. Security Council, will be partly lifted. We are right now joined by Fahim Yunus. He is Baltimore president of the Hamadiya Muslim Community, also a senior fellow at the Hofburger Center for Professional Ethics at the University of Baltimore. Fahim, welcome back to the program. Always a pleasure to have you.
Thank you very much for having me, Jimmy. It's my pleasure.
A complicated story that a lot of Americans don't understand. This is a deal America's been trying to strike for decades, I guess. It's 6 months. It seemed like the sanctions were working. Most simplistic, is this a good deal for the U.S.?
I believe so. I think that as a member of Ahmadiyya Muslim community, we welcome this peace initiative. And I want your listeners to understand I'm not making a pro-Iran argument. I'm making a pro-peace argument. Because think about it like this. If you have a fast-moving train, Jimmy, and you wanted to make a U-turn, you would expect it to slow down first and then hopefully stop, and only then you can reverse course. My belief is that this deal stops that, at least slows down that fast-moving train, that despite sanctions, if you really look at sanctions for the past so many years, Iran's nuclear program has progressed. They have continued despite sanctions. So nobody believes that sanctions would have stopped them. And this is the first time that we believe that there is now slowing down of the train, because they're, look at it, it's unprecedented daily inspections of their enrichment facilities all over. And that's, you know, Fordo, Arak, all of those things where we had no access before. Now the weapons inspectors will have unfettered access. So I think it's a good
step. Let's just clarify that, because I think that's been a source of confusion on this. So the inspectors are going to have unfettered access.
That's exactly what the deal says, that there are protections that Iran, it'll make it very hard for Iran to cheat. There is daily inspections at the enrichment facilities, the largest ones. One is at Natanz, one is at Fordo, the third one, the plutonium reactor that they were now working at in Arak, A-R-A-K. All of those things we didn't have access to before, and then there is a clear commitment to stop enriching uranium beyond 5%, which is needed to make a bomb.
Correct. So highly enriched uranium is what you need for the bomb.
That's right.
5% is what you're using for energy, that type of stuff.
For energy.
You know, right. And people got to remember, look, the United States, going back to 1957, we actually helped Iran launch their nuclear program.
That's exactly right.
One of the concerns I've heard on the enrichment aspect of this is they're downgrading their enriched uranium to get below that 5%, but that's an easy, reversible process, and they could take this lowly enriched uranium and ramp it back up down the road if they wanted to you know, for weaponry purposes.
Not really. What I have read, what I've asked people, it's not just bringing it below 5%, but they also have to dilute it or convert it to oxide. That's a chemical process that makes it very hard to enrich it again. So it's not just bringing it below 5%, but then they have to further dilute it and convert it into an oxide. So I think that process is not as likely. The deeper question here, as you're alluding to, Jimmy, is an issue of trust. When you have 34 years of freeze between two nations on the other end of the globe, there is very little trust. And now we are entering into a phase where nobody knows, but actually these two countries, these two leaders, have to do some trust building at home and also on the international arena. And I understand that's where the anxiety comes from, but what other option we have? I look at it like if there is a family feud between two uncles for 34 years and that's the family is suffering or some people are suffering, and just the fact that those two uncles are now talking and going to see each other, I think it's a positive step.
And Fahim, that part of it I do think is positive. My original issue with this was the six-month time frame. This country right now, it seems like everything we do, whether we're talking about budgets or continuing resolutions, everything we do is in these little short increments of time. If we can't get our own house in order domestically, what are we going to do in this six-month timetable to start the next leg of this conversation, I guess?
Perfect point. Very good point. The 6 months is just a door opener. You barely are getting your foot in the door. It doesn't achieve anything more. And in fact, there is a good chance that despite, even these 6 months may not go without turbulence, that when you actually go for that daily inspection, that you end up with something you didn't think that right. was on the deal. So all of those things are in the equation. And I believe that is why we just have to let it work out. But what is even harder is on both sides, you know, there are naysayers on both sides, and it's very difficult for any leader to make such a deal. And I believe that we need to give them a little bit of time, because there's a tendency sometimes to start calling people wimps and cowards, that, you know, you caved into pressure. That probably is not the right approach, because that's happening in Iran, and that will happen to some degree in Congress as well. I think it requires a lot of courage to make peace.
Let's talk about the sanctions, Fahim. I think a lot of times Americans don't understand the significance of sanctions. I've always viewed sanctions, to be honest with you, as almost an act of war. You know, I mean, if you want to come after me and you come after me financially, I'm biting back.
And, that's right.
And we see the effect that the sanctions were having on Iran. It was crippling their economy. So, I mean, we did give something for this deal. The question now is, what leverage do we have 6 months from now?
I think they use a very important word in the contract, which is they're not lifting up the sanctions, they're easing the sanctions. So when a world power says we're easing the sanctions, again, that just is a father who's saying to the child that go sit in the room and I may bring you back in 5 minutes. I may not. So the word easement really gives a lot of control to the United States, where those sanctions could go back in a minute, in a day, if there is a significant violation of the contract. So I believe there's significant leverage the United States continues to exercise.
Let me ask you a question.
Easement.
There is so much tension, Fahim, between Iran and Israel. The Islamic Republic, led by Shiite clerics, a predominantly Shiite nation, saw Israel as an illegitimate state with no right to exist. In the past, you had Ahmadinejad coming to the United Nations saying they wanted to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. Benjamin Netanyahu, obviously not a supporter of this deal, calling it a historic mistake. It seems like Israel wasn't really in this negotiation. We kind of did behind their back a little bit. Should have they been more involved in it, with them being our largest ally in that part of the world?